of Africa. Uganda, in particular, where Hagar Cohen has been busy finding people to talk to about things happening in Uganda. Hagar, welcome.
Thank you, John.
And now we're off to
Uganda. Off to Uganda, to Kampala, actually, Kampala? Which is a fantastic name for a capital city, don't you think?
Why Kampala?
Kampala.
It sounds like camp, and it's la la la, or no, it's just... You just like it as a word.
Oh, it's just, it sounds beautiful. All these African cities have these fantastic names.
Have you been to Africa?
I haven't, no. Well, I've been to Sinai in Egypt, which is sort of,
it's on the way.
So, yeah.
Just a little way up the Nile and you'd be fine.
But not all the way up to Uganda. How about you, John?
Yes, I have. Tanzania and South Africa and Zimbabwe around there. But I'd love to go right along those equatorial countries, which is where you're taking us this evening.
That's right. Well, there's many people actually in Kampala today, particularly the Queen of England, and 50 other heads of states are in Kampala. Well, they have been in Kampala this week for a royal visit, just checking out in the country. And Kirsty Payton is one of those lucky people who's been living in Africa for the past 5 years for Médecins Sans Frontières. And she's, you know, and I asked her, what was it like? Because, you know, we've had in Sydney, we've had APAC where we've had lots of heads of states and, you know, Sydney went into chaos. And I was wondering how it was like in Kampala. What was it the same sort of, you know, And she was telling me that there's a lot of security guards, and I've actually just read online that police started beating up human rights protesters. So it's not all nice, yeah. And they've been cleaning the streets, and all the poor people have been pushed away, so that you know, there's an impression that Uganda is a, you know, prosperous country. Because the poor are not being seen.
And, of course, the government are working towards an election process over the next few months. And of course, that's always problematic in developing societies. And Uganda's on its way back from a very difficult period. So I guess they have an additional reason for trying to at least look their best.
That's right.
Has unfortunate consequences. So...
Well, Christy's there in Kampala working with the locals and a lot of poor people, and she's telling us what it really is like in Kampala at the moment.
The Queen arrived yesterday. The heads of government are also arriving over the next 2 days. Before this, we've also seen the Youth Forum, which is people from the Commonwealth, but more the younger generation, also arriving. So what's happened in Kampala at the moment, it's been a complete lockdown in the city centre. The Queen was last here in, I think, the 50s, from what I understood, and she's quite keen to be visiting the old areas. It basically means for Kampala and Uganda is that they've spent an exceptional amount of money to make the city very beautiful and very comfortable for our visitors.
What is the impact on the local communities in Uganda? Are they feeling this at all?
Absolutely. I think it's been positive for some, certainly for the people at the higher spectrum of the scale. I mean, the ones with the hotels and with the businesses that will be utilised during the shogun. But I think also it's had positive and negative impacts for the other people that, so the refugees, the people that are a little bit more at the poverty end, who were living in perhaps areas that are not considered pretty or ideal and that have been removed for the visit of the Queen.
How do you mean being removed?
There's certain areas of the city which will be sealed off for the Queen's visit, knowing that they will travel along certain roads and visit in certain areas. And, of course, if there were people that were in these particular zones that were living in some sort of squalor, they're basically pushed back so that people could not be seen, and it wasn't... And I guess that there was a very positive image portrayed of Kampala. This, I think, has probably been the negative, and this has been where people have been a little bit disgruntled, obviously, within the country. Also, too, I would say that because there's been this flooding that's been going on up in the eastern parts of the country, where 300,000 people were displaced, I mean, through the shogun, they've spent $120 million to make the city beautiful and only $12 million for the floods. So, again, there is some controversy as to the allocation of resources and inequity.
Well, I presume you're working with Médecins Sans Frontières with the more with the poorer communities of Kampala and Uganda. Does that anger you that the government is willing to spend so much money for these types of, events rather than on its own people?
For sure. I mean, I think that when you look in the short-term perspective, you can see that, of course, that there is immediate disparity in this distribution, which, of course, means that people are missing out. And it does, I guess, does disappoint me in some way. But I think long-term, and I think if you look at the global overview, the idea of having the shogun here is to boost trade and is to boost relationships and is to portray Kampala and Uganda as a beautiful country, which it is. And to show it off to the world, to bring business and tourism back into the country, which again, in the long term, would have a positive benefit. So I can see both sides of it, but I do certainly understand where people are coming from in the more destitute areas.
I want to ask you a question, a bit more general question, because on the Australian government's travel advice website for Uganda, the first sentence warns the visitors to exercise high degree of caution in Uganda because of the risk of terrorist attack, civil unrest and criminal activity.
Mm.
How much of this do you notice?
Basically, for us, it's more the chaos that this event brings more than the security concerns, I think. Obviously, to have a gathering of such signatories in one particular place is a concern for anybody. But within Kampala itself, if you are out of the city and out of the congestion, I think that you are relatively safe. It's more at the moment for us that just avoiding basic areas that make sense, like the airport and the city centres. But again, not just for security, but more just for the ease of manoeuvrability.
Christy, why don't you tell me a little bit about your role in Uganda and the type of projects that Médecins Sans Frontières are running in Uganda?
I'm what they refer to as a head of mission, which basically is a country director in layman's or non-MSF speak. So basically, this means that I have an overall of the country's programs and just providing direction, I guess, underneath the MSF policies. So I think this pretty much entails like the normal sort of coordination of the logistics, the medical administration, finance, and also just the general programs on the ground. But it also has a lot to do with negotiations and lobbying and networking at a much higher level. I guess the representation of MSF Swiss also to key members in Uganda and also to different funding and I guess movers and shakers within this sort of an array of players.
And are you dealing normally with the HIV AIDS programs, or what type of programs are you running there?
Okay, so basically we have two very distinctively different programs, predominantly in the north, which is the area that was infiltrated by the Lord's Resistance Army for the last 20 years, when most people are living in camps. We've been running programs there since 2003, focused on providing access to healthcare, so looking at HIV, looking at TB, looking at maternity. Of course, there's mental health problems with people living in a chronic camp situation, maternity, delivery, ANC, this sort of thing. But then on the complete opposite, we have a program on the east, and now we've also opened in Kenya, focusing more on neglected diseases, one in particular called Kalazar, which is endemic to a certain population that is completely neglected in a very isolated area. And this is a disease that generally there is no treatment or diagnosis for, but is available, I guess, to the population. So if these people are not treated, then they, as a consequence, will die. So MSF has been involved in this since 2000 and just recently crossed the border in 2007 to Kenya.
I know also that this isn't the first time you're actually in Africa. You've previously spent some time in Sudan, which would seem to many a very dangerous place to be in.
No, I don't. I think perhaps, I think you don't become accustomed and you don't become compliant. I think what you become is knowledgeable and you become a little bit more aware of your surroundings and your context, and you learn to trust also your community that you're working with, the population, and generally your safeguard here. And of course, if you're doing the right thing for them and supporting them and looking after them, I think they will also in turn try at the most to provide some sort of assistance to you when it comes to security. So they're the first to let you know if there's a problem, basically. I've been in Africa for the last 5 years, and I would say that with every year, I become more and more comfortable, I think, as I said, within the context, but also too, knowing that we have very stringent security rules and guidelines which help us to ensure that our teams and ourselves are managed well within these different environments.
Well, a few years back, there was an excellent documentary about Uganda called Invisible Children. I'm not sure if you've seen it, but it was about child soldiers. Do you notice that phenomenon at all?
Basically, the child soldiers situation evolved out of the situation in the north, which is whereby, as I was explaining before, with the Lord's Consistent Army and the war that's been going on up there since 1986. As a result of this, the Lord's Resistance Army were abducting children, up to apparently 30,000. And in fact, in response, MSF opened a program in 2003 in Gulu to support children that were commuting to assure that they were not abducted. So what would happen is each night is these children would walk into town to seek shelter. So we were taking 5,000 to 10,000 children on a nightly basis. And this happened for a period of 4 years to ensure that they were not being abducted. What we're seeing now is with the peace talks since June 2006 is a return of these children in slow dibs and drabs, highly traumatised. There's only a few of them that have come out of the bush. This is questions as to where the rest are and probably feared dead. But certainly it is a phenomenon that was going on and it is clearly reported. It's just that the numbers are not so clear.
So these children are actually coming, escaping and coming into your camps, are they?
Basically, what was happening is children were escaping throughout the entire duration of the war. So they would go, they would be abducted, and if they were fortunate, they would escape. But the problem was generally escaping was very difficult, and of course, if you were caught, the repercussions were very severe. So when I was talking about them coming into our night community shelter, it was more these were children that their parents were sending as a preventative means of them not being abducted. So they didn't sleep within the family unit at night. They would sleep in these shelters for protection to avoid this happening to them. But as also too, with the children returning throughout the duration of the war of the last 20 years, we're also seeing now with the peace talks more and more coming out. But again, there is a promise of the government of a blanket amnesty and a reintegration, but I think this will be quite difficult for a lot of these people who've spent the last 10 or 15 years in the bush with rebel soldiers.
Well, on the upper side, people also say about Africa that it's quite addictive.
Africa in general, yes, very addictive. Huh? It's one of these places that you go and that you love and you tend to always come back to. But I think this has more probably to do with the people. I think African people have a general nature of being just wonderful and very. It's a very humbling experience, I think, to be in Africa. It makes you realise how fortunate you actually are. And how gracious that people are here to share and to support you in every possible way. We, in fact, have very little themselves. Of course, the countries generally are quite beautiful. The harsh desert of Sudan was not so beautiful, but Uganda is very beautiful. It's a key reason why to come back.
What about the music? I understand that it's a major part of the culture in Uganda.
Ah, oh, absolutely. Ugandans love music. I mean, generally in any African country that you will go to, the children of three, just as they're walking, will be able to shake their hips better than you or I could ever do. So what you tend to find is music is so embedded in their culture. They have a very distinctive beat here, generally related to each of the groups throughout the country. But what I would say is it's predominantly quick and fast with a lot of drums and a lot of movements in the hips to respond to it. So pretty much everywhere that you will go, whether it be a lunchtime function, there will be music, there will be dancing, and a lot of people trying awkwardly as expatriates to engage, but not doing it so well.
Including you?
Including me. You've got to have a go.
Christy, just lastly, what would be the best experience so far you've had in Uganda?
Oh dear, there's lots of wonderful experiences in Uganda. Probably when I first arrived, I went back to Uganda. I was in fact working here in 2003 and I went directly back to the north where I'd been working previously before, back to Gulu town. And I think that just arriving back, it's the first time I've actually gone back in a mission to the same area and the same location, and to see the staff and to see the programs, but to also see the evolution of the context and to see how it had changed quite positively. And to see too that families that I knew that were living in this absolute squalor and just to hear about some of the very, very positive aspects of their lives now with jobs and children going to school you know, I think it's very nice to come back from what is a really difficult situation that you can see is quite trying on the population, and to see such a turnaround in only a space of 2 years. So for me, I think this is probably the most interesting and the most enjoyable part of coming back.
The sounds of Uganda. Thank you to Hugo Cohen for seeking out and finding such interesting folk for us to meet on Sunday night.